So, Sarah Hatchett, prepping for this podcast, I was thinking, if CIOs were physicians, what specialty would we have? And sadly, my first thought was that we're proctologists because we're all up in everybody's business and we know where everything is and all the problems are. What would you say to that question?
I guess I would have to go with an obstetrician because, you know, we birth things into the existence, like you have a 9 months of implementation period followed by a big go live.
That's great. All that and more on Transformers. What does transformation mean and what can we learn from those leading the way? Join me as I talk to my fellow nerds about our experiences in technology, business, and just being human. I'm Anne Fanai, CIO and Vice President of Business Platform Transformation at IBM, and this is Transformers, a Think podcast. So, Sarah Hatchett, thank you so much for joining us. Why don't I pause here and let you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Thank you so much, Anne. It's a pleasure to be here chatting with you. My name is Sarah Hatchett. I am the SVP and CIO here at the Cleveland Clinic. I've been at Cleveland Clinic for the last 7 years, and I've been in role for the last year and a half.
You know what? And I have to say, before we dive in, I think I mentioned this on an earlier podcast. I am a Cleveland girl through and through. Went to college at Case Western, right adjacent there to Cleveland Clinic. And, you know, the clinic itself has given many members of my family fantastic care over the years. And I mean, thank you for all that not just you do, but the Cleveland Clinic does. Just a phenomenal foundation.
Yeah, I'm very, very proud to work for the Cleveland Clinic and very happy to be located here in Cleveland. I'm a Wisconsin native, but have found my second home here. We really, really enjoy the area.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I'm so excited. I know we didn't talk in our previous conversation sports, but I love all my sad Cleveland sports teams. You might have, if you're Wisconsin, you might be a Green Bay girl, but like I've got my sad Browns and very excited to come for my Cavs this year, though. Well, let me dive in. I think there's a really cliche question I could ask, which is, what's it like being a female in the C-suite? But I kind of want to turn that question on its head and say, what do you bring to the role that you feel is unique in your leadership style, your personality, the way you lead teams? I would be curious to talk to you from that angle to start with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, being a female CIO in healthcare is rewarding and challenging. And I find it particularly rewarding to bring a very diverse perspective to the leadership team to really help shape an inclusive culture. And my own experience has been reinforcing the importance of that representation through really leading with authenticity. I find that's part of my personal brand and something that has just really driven success in building trust and collaboration across the team. I think we all face challenges, and I think the really important thing is that we continue to drive results and build those trusted relationships, as well as really seek to build up others in the process. You know, I think living out the example, mentoring others so that others can see themselves in those leadership roles, as well as just networking to stay connected with others in the industry. And, you know, Anne, we initially connected as peer female CIO leaders, but I think we quickly found that the connections go well beyond that. Have you seen that to be the case where mentoring and networking play a role in your career journey?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you used a word I really love in there, authenticity. And I think that's one of the bits of feedback I get when I coach and mentor others is the like bringing that authenticity and allowing people to bring their whole selves to work. And I think for me and what I've seen through my leadership journey, it's certainly been, you know, again, it's nice to say, hey, I'm usually, there's a good chance I'm the only female in the room, especially in the tech spaces. But, you know, even more so, it's like, how do you do it without losing who you are? How do you not, it's a diverse point of view. I mean, you and I may even look like Caucasian women. However, we grew up differently, right? We each bring pieces of that. And again, I go back to the whole self comment. You have to allow people to bring their whole self and every point of view. And so important for mentoring, coaching, and, you know, even more importantly, I think every leader, part of your job is what's your bench, who comes after you, right? Creating that wonderful bench of talent that will be the next generation after us.
Cleveland Clinic has a set of values, which I'm super proud of, and I try to live by every single day. And I think so many of them, things like inclusion and teamwork and empathy, like all of that is going to be hindered if you're not able to bring your full authentic self to work every day. And even when you look in the tech roles, things like innovation and creativity and those things that we highly value, if you're not coming to work as your full self or bringing your full self, we're going to have an impact not only to yourself, but the team and the entire organization. So I think it's really important that you build that team culture where people feel comfortable and included in the process.
You know, if I may pivot, I think you are the only guest on this podcast actually in the healthcare space. And there's some very, very, very unique challenges that you have to deal with as a CIO in the healthcare space. And I think, you know, maybe just to kind of start off with, what do you see in your experience as unique to healthcare versus perhaps either under other industries or tech in general?
Everybody likes to say they're special. I actually think healthcare is very special. I mean, not only do we operate within a very complex ecosystem, but the stakes are incredibly high. I mean, we're a 24/7 operation, but literally patients' lives are at stake. So when there's a disruption, you're impacting patient care. And we really drive that home in terms of like high reliability and sustainability within the organization. The other thing is that we are held to a higher bar than other industries. So for things like ensuring data privacy and security, interoperability across systems, adapting to ever-changing regulations, like these things are unique that factor into the technology decisions that we make every single day. On top of that, when you think about the root of our mission is patient care, we always have to be sensitive to the fact that any advanced technology that we're implementing could sort of lose that human touch or lose that human in the loop or lose the clinical special sauce, if you will, that is the Cleveland Clinic. So I think those things are all important so that we're thinking strategically, we're acting with a lot of precision, and we're collaborating with our clinical counterparts to make sure that we're well-informed in everything that we do.
Pulling the thread on the security and regulation, I think, you know, Cleveland Clinic doesn't just have U.S. HIPAA regulations and things like that. The Cleveland Clinic attracts a global patient set as well. And so you're really caregiving, you know, for people coming in anywhere in the world. I think, again, when I was living there, very well known, it would be, you know, Cleveland Clinic is number one in so many spaces. And just that, I remember the gorgeous hotel built on the campus of the Cleveland Clinic because of the international folks coming to Cleveland Clinic. And how does now that global view play into not just the patient care and data privacy, but also like general risk of everything you do in the space?
For sure. So, you know, regulations like HIPAA, and then we've recently expanded in the UK where GDPR is relevant. Mm-hmm. By the way, not only that, local, state, and federal regulations that apply within each of the geographic contexts that we expand to do provide guardrails for protecting sensitive data, right? Like they're there for a good reason, but it can add layers of complexity when you look at innovation or new products and those sorts of things. So for our patients, it's imperative that we can ensure trust and safety, but it can sometimes slow the seamless flow of information across systems, for example. There's also an element of keeping our caregivers, our employees, up to date on all of these different continuous trainings and investments that we have to make in secure and scalable systems. So while the regulations are necessary, they do challenge us to find creative and compliant ways to drive progress forward.
The system itself might be a little boring, right? Like the systems of record, the back end, but on the front end, it's, you know, this is software that supports highly technical surgeries. It's working with pharmaceutical companies, thinking about trials and studies and all that. How do you balance that, I guess, the necessity of staying forward thinking with the technology you bring into the Cleveland Clinic with that balance of risk every day?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, first of all, Cleveland Clinic is an academic medical center, which means there's three towers. It's patient care, which is we're most well known for, but then there's also research and education. And each of those stakeholder groups have their own set of goals and objectives that they're trying to achieve. So, you know, solutions, technology solutions may benefit research, but then there's an impact to the actual physicians, for example. So those sorts of trade-offs are really important to understand. The other thing of working for the Cleveland Clinic is, you know, vendors want to work with us because of our brand and our eminence in the healthcare space. I think it's really important that we're vetting those opportunities really carefully to make sure that everything is, you know, safe, secure, and the right choice for us in terms of the investments that we make in technology. Additionally, just everything that we're adding in to clinicians' workflow can add to burnout and, you know, other things that could have unintended side effects. What may show up as a great patient safety benefit may actually end up hurting us operationally, for example. So I really think that my role as a CIO is to partner with clinical and operational and business stakeholders from across the organization to make sure that there's alignment to those goals and that, yeah, we're checking the box on it passes our technology standards, but also it's actually meeting a real need and solving a real business problem. I think as long as we keep our focus on patients first, which is our mission, and that we're solving real business problems, you really can't go wrong.
So Sarah, talking a lot about like risk and data privacy, are there any specific examples you could provide where you've had to really dig in and balance the trade-offs in that space?
A current hot topic right now in healthcare IT, for example, is around information blocking. So there may be information that's part of a patient's clinical medical record that for whatever reason may not be something that patient wants shared. It could be a sensitive diagnosis or a medication that they're taking. We all know healthcare data is extremely private and important for our patients. That being said, there may be sweeping regulations that would, for example, limit the information that is shared to other clinicians. Now there's potentially a patient safety risk because not all that information is available as clinical decisions are being made. So in that example, should there be regulations along those lines, we would have to make broad scale changes, not only to our IT systems, but to our operating model to be able to accommodate those sorts of things. So we're deeply involved in industry partnerships and government relations and those sorts of things that help us stay abreast of those changing dynamics so that we can be best prepared for how we may need to adapt those regulations into our practices.
And I really love that nuance you're bringing to the, you know, to the medical healthcare industry, because again, I think a lot of times in the technical seats, we're just thinking about, you know, data started in point, you know, point A, it's an HR record or something. Can I follow that through? Or you're thinking accounting data. This is really, you know, it's the nuance again, these back to these life and death decisions that, you know, you want to give the best patient care, but there's a regulatory angle that has to be considered here.
Yeah, and just to sort of bring it back to the AI topic, you know, when you think about healthcare data, we've really been collecting a rich amount of data for the last two or three decades. Mm-hmm. Really, what we're hoping to do is with tools like generative AI is really unlock that data and surface it directly in the clinical workflow so that we're better informing clinical care. That being said, if your data is not right or it's biased or it's inaccurate, you're now having a whole different set of problems. So it, again, it's a really exciting time to be in healthcare IT because I think we're finally going to be able to deliver on some of the promises that all of this data has yielded. And I'm really hoping to see that transformative element of layering in those data insights in a safe and equitable way.
Something you said when we were chatting earlier was really a point of view that is part of the Cleveland Clinic's values is that you are all caregivers. No matter what your role is, you're a caregiver. There's something to me that's really special too about like you are a patient, right? Like your health, you know, your health benefits plan, you are a Cleveland Clinic patient, but you're also a caregiver. You see it. Does actually being on thinking of yourself as a caregiver or knowing that you're a patient help drive the experience you're trying to create from a CIO seat?
We don't have the term employee around here. Everyone is a caregiver, including our teams in sort of the administrative areas, including IT. And I think that really speaks to our mission, but it also helps motivate and inspire us to live and work at a higher standard. I mean, all of us are caregivers and all of us are patients. You want to treat the Cleveland Clinic as if it was your home. And it is our home because we're here as patients receiving care. We want to be the best place to receive care and the best place to work in healthcare. And part of that comes through a very personal journey and a commitment to the mission of the Cleveland Clinic. And I know that sounds maybe fancy, but I do think it's why I get up and come to work every single day, because I have the opportunity to actually drive the transformation of healthcare throughout the globe.
And that's just so meaningful. And I think one of the pivot points I look at in my career is that I really want to be somewhere where there's a mission that drives me. I want to know I'm not blindly chasing a dollar or doing something. I will say one of the things I do love about IBM is at one point, in one way, yes, it's a tech company, but I know our tech helps the Cleveland Clinic. It helps other folks. You know, it helps banks. It helps healthcare entities. It's really being able to anchor in on a mission. And I think just again, it's something that so drives all of us. And I know for me, I think I shared when we were speaking earlier, is like, I think there's a new world past COVID too, that so many people, we went through something really hard as a society, as a humanity around the world. And now it's like this mission-driven thought. I think it's just absolutely, it's so critical, whatever that mission is that drives you to find it.
Yeah, absolutely. Over the last decade or so, Cleveland Clinic has experienced a tremendous amount of growth. We've expanded in Florida, and I mentioned our new hospital in London. And, each one of those facilities has to be IT enabled and has to be on standard IT systems. And for a period there, my team was really struggling because it was a huge resource intensive effort to bring all of those sites onto our standard platforms. And what we did is we actually brought in the CEO, and he talked to us about, look, if we believe we truly set the standard that we have the best care in the world, then we have a moral imperative to continue to grow and expand our services everywhere we possibly can. And it was like, wow, that is incredibly amazing. And we have a hand in doing that through IT. So I really think connecting back to the mission definitely helps with the inspiration, but also helps us overcome challenges because we're all focused on the same goal. We're all focused on the same outcomes. And that's a shared mission across the entire Cleveland Clinic. So it's really, really exciting to be part of something that's so big and important.
And I almost feel like it's an interesting segue. I wanted to kind of bring up the topic of AI as well, because I think I don't know if it's my pet peeves or points of view, depending on what day it is. It could be either or both, but with AI being where it's at, we're chasing shiny objects. And I think, again, what you're saying Cleveland Clinic does, really driving that focus, I would hope it helps to maybe clarify and prevent you from chasing shiny objects that don't have that benefit to the patient, to the doctor, to the families of the patients. What are you seeing specifically in healthcare that are some trends around AI, how you're driving it, how you're approaching it?
I have to agree with you. I think AI, and specifically generative AI, has immense potential even for healthcare. But I do think we have to approach it thoughtfully and intentionally. A lot of the solutions are focused on experience, and that is super important, right? When you're talking about experience being part of a whole life of a patient. But yet, I think we do need to think about what is the business case, and is there, in fact, ROI for some of these technologies? Because you may end up investing in something too early, for example, that doesn't yield the benefits that you're looking for. Here at the clinic, we're leveraging AI for tasks like clinical documentation, streamlining administrative workflows, and of course, more classical AI involved in like predictive analytics for clinical care needs, like for example, the onset of sepsis. If we can detect that earlier, we can introduce more interventions that do save patients' lives. But you mentioned risk, and so I do want to say that I think there is risk in using AI. We have to be very cognizant of things like bias, inaccuracies, ethical concerns. So we've done a ton of work around establishing really clear guidelines and governance to ensure that there's transparency and reliability in these solutions that we're introducing. And again, I don't want to harp on this, but you do have to make sure you're solving real business problems while staying grounded in those commitments to our core mission. So I think all of those things are really shaping our overall AI strategy. And it's a really, really exciting time to be in healthcare IT.
Yeah, and if I could just tie together a few points you made that, you know, really, again, it's, I think every business, and again, I think Cleveland Clinic uniquely set up to have that focus on don't chase the shiny objects, but also the, you know, in the sense of risk for what you do. And if AI, if you've got a, you can't have hallucinations, people's lives are literally at risk. And that makes AI in your space, I guess I would say probably, maybe not a little more challenging, but needs to have a few extra stop gaps on it, a few extra tests on it, a few extra pieces like that.
Yeah, I would say as it relates to clinical decision support, I think we, along with many other healthcare organizations, are taking a very conservative approach where you really need that human in the loop. At this point, anything that we're doing that's clinical in nature, clinical decisions, diagnoses, those sorts of things, are all being done by the physician or other clinical staff. So the things that we're trying to do is there's 100 other things that a physician does throughout the day that are administrative in nature that aren't value add and that don't have any kind of clinical relevance. So how do we take those things off the plate so that they show up in that space as being completely mentally focused and like ready to go to do the things that we value as the most important aspects of our care.
As a patient, that's a reassuring thought for me, certainly. It's the AI might be supporting a clinical decision, but you're still saying, hey, look, the doctors, the physicians have they've got the knowledge, the experience to really weed through, okay, I've seen this work, I haven't seen this work, here's where we got to take a risk, I see a permutation here, et cetera. And I think it sounds like a really nice balance that you guys are taking there.
Yeah, and I think you're right to bring up the patients, right? I do think they benefit from having our clinicians who are more engaged and ready. I'll give you a quick example. We're using generative AI to create a draft message for any patient messages that have been sent to those physicians. It's just a draft, and the physician can review it and make any edits before they're sending it on to the patient. And the patient feedback has been tremendous. Interestingly enough, they're finding those messages to be more empathetic and even more human-like than what the actual physician messages are. So there you go. Empathy in motion. And it's a
bot. Oh my gosh. I have to admit that is hilarious. And because, you know, it's, you know, again, I think about now that you're an adult, like when I was a child, the physician, they were these big scary folks, but you know, they're human too. And sometimes, you know, having friends that have gone down the medical path, you need to put aside your empathy so you can to treat the patient. And I almost love it's kind of the converse. Everyone's afraid that AI is going to take away our humanity and empathy. And in this case, we're actually helping the doctor, the physician to focus and putting the empathy in the AI instead.
Exactly. Exactly. You've got it exactly right.
It's entertaining. Let me kind of pivot a little bit once again and say, like, you know, there's a lot of trends that come and go. And I know you said you've been with the Cleveland Clinic, I think you said 7 years now.
That's right.
You've seen crazy medical arcs again with a global pandemic. You've seen change in technology over the last 7 years has been, you know, immense across the board. Do you see any sets of skills that you say are either needed now, or I'll also throw in there, like, maybe we might think it's an old skill, but it still is relevant as we go forward here. That just, like, don't throw that out. This is still a skill that you're going to need going forward.
First of all, I want to dispel the myth that, and maybe you share this view, that once you're a CIO, you like know everything, right?
I always say I'm not the smartest person in any room. There is always someone that knows something I can learn from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like I learn every day. And honestly, in our space, I think there's so much going on, whether it's data and analytics or AI or cybersecurity or emerging point solutions. There really isn't any way to know it all or do it all, which is why I think it's so important to focus on building the leadership team and figuring out how to organize ourselves in the way to be literally the most effective IT department to serve our organization. How do we focus less on how much do I know, and how do we instead create a learning environment where everyone's empowered? So I really think that team building can't be underestimated as skills. So I think we tend to focus on the technical aspects, and I think team building is huge. And I think if I could say what are the core skills in that zone, I would say is really adaptability and collaboration and emotional intelligence. I think adaptability allows us to thrive and change. Obviously, collaboration, you can harness this power of this diverse team. And again, I mentioned this earlier about trust. Emotional intelligence helps you handle those difficult situations and lead effectively through that process. So I know there's a lot of skills required at this level, but I think those skills in particular seem to me foundational, probably bridge all industry and roles, but I feel are especially relevant given how dynamic healthcare technology is.
Yeah, and I do love that you've brought emotional intelligence into it, because I do think from a skill perspective, it seems natural. One of the things I remember earlier, maybe a decade ago, there was the site Slashdot, where you go for your kind of nerdy information. And if you didn't, there's this concept of if you didn't log in and post with a question with your name or an answer, they listed you as anonymous coward. And I think, which I always found to be just hilarious. I thoroughly enjoyed that. But there's something, I think, about that, that if you really bridge it today with like EQ and you think about like generationally, like we've got some really smart folks who have had access to so much more information than we did when we were coming of age. But I think there's this, I think there's a tendency that we are going to be facing down of that EQ of saying, you've got to have the face-to-face conversation. You've got to be able to have a direct conversation. It's, you can't go blasting people online, right? The way that you, I think, thrive in rapidly changing tech environments is to have those, you know, the hard face-to-face conversations grounded in data, grounded in science, and that drives really for the best outcome is everyone coming together with their, EQ light on full and an open mind to have the conversation.
I'm not gonna lie, for many years, I thought emotional intelligence was all about reading someone else's emotions and being able to respond to them. And it's really only recently that I'm like, hey, this is more about me than anything else. Like, I need to understand how I'm projecting, how am I reacting? Because really, at the end of the day, all you can do is control the way that you handle situations. And I do think that has great benefit and downstream effects for the entire team. But you're definitely part of the equation, and you need to sort of be self-aware and be engaged in that process and work on it.
Yeah, no, and I think I talk with my team a lot about we're actually doing a big face-to-face in a few weeks and saying like, we're solving some hard problems, and we can see ourselves like kind of getting at each other's throats a little here and there, but like we all have the EQ, we recognize we're doing it, and let's talk about how we want to show up for each other. Let's talk about bringing that to the table. How do we work? Like, let's be honest about our failure modes. And that's something I've actually found through, I've had really good career and leadership development at different roles I've been in. And I found that to be it's almost better to know what your failure mode is than what your strengths are. At least that's been one of the things I've learned, is look for what happens when times get hard. How do you show up? Because, it's easy to show up sunshine, puppy dogs, and roses when things are going well. But how do you show up for people when things are hard?
Yeah, definitely.
Is there something, as a human being, again, with this podcast, want to really bring our humanity to this? You've had an incredible career and many more years ahead of an even more incredible career. So excited to have you in my network. But is there anything you can really step back and say that you've learned from failure specifically that you think would be a nice takeaway for folks?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned is the importance of humility and resilience. I mean, look, failure is inevitable when you're pushing boundaries like we're being asked to do. But I also see there an opportunity to learn and grow. So I think showing up with a humble posture, being transparent and acknowledging what went wrong, but also with a willingness to adapt and move forward, will be a stepping stone for greater success. And it gives you an opportunity to potentially build a relationship with that person, admitting that you're wrong and being able to be humble about that and saying, look, I've already admitted I don't know everything. I think there's always an opportunity that can help you build greater success if you do show up, admit the opportunity and be able to grow and learn from mistakes moving forward.
Really, you just set the perfect ending for this podcast, which is women from the Midwest should lead all tech organizations. I think that's what we learned here today, right? So, Sarah, seriously, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I'm so excited to finally get a chance to meet you in person soon and just, you know, love what you're doing there. Love the Cleveland Clinic and just keep being awesome and doing everything you guys are doing over there. Thank you.
It was such a pleasure to meet with you today. And again, looking forward to seeing you soon.
And thanks to all of you for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and we'll see you back next time.